What if I told you that the secret to catching more fish is to actually legally ban anyone from fishing in massive sections of the ocean?
I mean, it sounds like a complete contradiction, right? We are so used to, treating resources as a simple subtraction problem.
Right, exactly. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at a dynamic landscape full of surprises, and we're unpacking what has to be like the ultimate biological brain teaser.
Yeah, the idea that you have a finite amount of something, you use a piece of it, and you just have less left over.
But marine biology operates on a completely different set of mathematical rules, doesn't it?
It really does. And to figure out those rules, we're pulling from this incredibly dense, rigorous study that was recently published in Nature Communications.
Yeah, the researchers Chung, Palacios Abrantes, and Roberts, they ran these massive, highly detailed simulation experiments,
Yeah.
and they were focusing specifically on the Northeast Atlantic.
Right. And our mission today is to take their data and map out how we can actually save our oceans from, well, the twin threats of climate change and overfishing.
Because they didn't just look at broad trends. They modeled highly specific scenarios tracking fish populations all the way to the year 2100.
Exactly. They combined like complex climate physics with marine biology. It's an incredible undertaking.
Which is exactly why you, listening to this right now, should care. Whether you're a dedicated seafood lover, a sustainability advocate, or, just someone fascinated by how we solve complex global puzzles.
Because this research basically provides the blueprint.
It maps out the exact formula needed to keep our oceans alive and productive in the 21st century. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Before we can get to the solution, which is these protected marine areas, we have to establish the baseline, right? We need to understand the physiological crisis happening beneath the waves right now.
That baseline is super critical. To build it, the researchers use something called the Dynamic Bioclimate Envelope Model, or DBEM for short.
DBEM. Okay, so what exactly does that do?
You can think of it as a virtual ocean. It basically takes the massive data outputs from Earth system models, so things like projected atmospheric warming, greenhouse gas emissions,
Ocean current disruptions, all that stuff.
right, all of it. And it translates those physical changes into actual biological consequences for the fish.
Wow. And the data shows a pretty devastating combination of three things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Ocean warming, a steady loss of dissolved oxygen, and decreased net primary production.
Okay, let's define that last term for a second. Net primary production. That's essentially the ocean's energy budget, right?
That is the perfect way to look at it, actually. It's the total amount of energy produced by phytoplankton,
Yeah.
the microscopic plants at the base of the food web,
Right.
minus the energy those plants use for their own respiration. So it's basically the foundational fuel for the entire marine ecosystem.
So you've got water's getting hotter, oxygen levels dropping, and the foundational fuel supply is shrinking all at the same time.
Exactly. And the baseline data from the DBEM reveals a really stark reality. Individual fish stock biomass is projected to decrease by 5 to 15% for every single degree Celsius of atmospheric warming.
Wait, 15%. A 15% drop per degree of warming is a staggering penalty.
It truly is. And when the researchers summed up the biomass across all the exploited stocks they analyzed, the baseline model showed a community-level drop of about 8% per degree Celsius.
So if I'm trying to visualize the biological mechanism here, the warmer water basically acts like a treadmill that keeps speeding up.
Right, because fish are cold-blooded.
Exactly. So the warmer the water, the higher their metabolism runs, forcing them to burn more and more energy just to
Yeah.
exist.
Yep.
But at the same time, the dropping oxygen levels and the shrinking energy budget mean they are essentially running this high-speed treadmill while breathing through a straw and starving.
What's fascinating here is that that captures the physiological reality incredibly well. But let me build on your treadmill
Go
analogy.
for it.
Imagine the air in the gym where that treadmill sits is slowly being pumped out. In biology, we refer to this as a reduced aerobic scope.
Aerobic scope.
Right. A fish's aerobic scope is the difference between its resting metabolic rate and its maximum possible metabolic rate.
Oh, I see.
It's basically the energy buffer it has available for anything beyond just basic survival.
Meaning the energy needed to grow larger or to reproduce or, I don't know, fight off a parasite?
Correct. So as the water warms, that resting metabolic rate shoots up, the fish demands more oxygen.
Right.
But because the ocean is physically losing dissolved oxygen, the fish hits a hard physiological wall. Its aerobic scope just shrinks to zero.
Wow. So it simply doesn't have the biological energy left over to maintain its population.
Exactly. It's not just a matter of the fish being uncomfortable. The combination of a squeezed metabolic scope and a decreased energy supply literally suffocates the population out of existence over time.
That is terrifying. So if the ocean itself is fundamentally losing its capacity to support these metabolisms, we can't just cool down the water overnight. No, obviously not.
We have to look at the only major pressure variable we can actually control right now, which is how many fish we are pulling out of the water.
Precisely. And this brings us to the proposed intervention in the study: no-take marine protected areas, or MPAs.
Right, and these are designated zones where commercial fishing is strictly prohibited, correct?
Yep, completely banned. To test if NTAs could actually counteract the climate squeeze, the researchers modeled 231 exploited species.
Wow, that's a lot of species.
Yeah, it included both fish and invertebrates, spread across 8 different marine ecoregions in the Northeast Atlantic.
Okay, so a massive scale.
Huge. And they ran thousands of simulations to see what would happen if we implemented different levels of these no-take zones, like protecting 5%, 15%, or 30% of the ocean area.
And then they combine those zones with different targets for reducing overall fishing efforts.
Exactly. And they were evaluating all of these combinations against a specific climate trajectory, a 2.6 to 2.9 degrees Celsius global warming scenario, which is key, right? Because that number represents the actual trajectory our current global policies and emissions have us locked into for the rest of the 21st century.
Right. They needed a realistic stress test. They couldn't just invent a best-case scenario. And through that modeling, they found a highly specific winning formula.
Okay, what is it?
If we want to completely offset the negative biomass impacts of that 2.6 to 2.9 degree warming scenario for overexploited fish stocks, the intervention requires two things simultaneously.
I'm listening.
We must protect 30% of the geographic distribution of those overexploited stocks, and we must combine that with a 25% reduction in fishing catch.
Okay, let me make sure I have that. 30% protection plus a 25% catch reduction.
Yes, because the reduced fishing catch on its own allows the biomass to rebound by about 29%.
Okay, that sounds pretty good.
It does, but the warming ocean is actively trying to drag that population back down by over 30%.
I see. So the warming cancels out the catch reduction.
Exactly. So adding that 30% no-take MPA coverage provides the specific localized sanctuary needed to keep the population stable. It effectively cancels out the climate penalty.
Let me try a financial analogy to explain the mechanics of how this actually benefits the fishing industry, because that's the paradox we started with. A no-take MPA acts a lot like a high-yield savings account. You lock up 30% of your total wealth, the fish in a vault, and you legally cannot touch the principal.
Right, the principal is safe.
You let the biological interest compound. But it generates so much new life that the wealth literally spills over the borders of the MPA into your checking account.
Which is the 70% of the ocean where fishing is still allowed.
Exactly.
That's perfect. The study actually uses that exact term, by the way, the spillover effect.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For overexploited stocks, establishing a 30% MPA coverage increases the total catch potential in the surrounding areas by 10%. But to understand why the biological interest spills over, we have to look at physical pressure. It's like inflating a balloon inside a small box.
Okay.
As the MPA stops the fishing pressure, the population inside rebuilds, the fish grow larger, and they reproduce exponentially.
So the box gets crowded.
Highly crowded. The biomass within the protected zone becomes so dense that the fish are essentially forced to migrate outward across the invisible boundary line just to find available space and food.
So fishermen are restricted from some percent of the territory, but their overall yield goes up because the remaining 70% is constantly being restocked by the overflow from the sanctuary.
Exactly.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because my immediate thought looking at those numbers is, well, if locking up 30% gives us 10% more fish, why not protect 50% or 80%?
Right. If a little is good, a lot must be better.
Yeah. Let's just draw massive boxes all over the map and reap the rewards. What is the catch here?
The catch is that geography matters immensely. You can't just draw a box on a map and expect a biological miracle. The data in the study makes a crucial distinction about where those boundaries are placed. If you treat the ocean like a blank canvas and randomly protect 30% of the Northeast Atlantic, the total stock biomass only increases by 5.4%.
Wait, but the formula called for a much higher boost to offset the climate penalty.
Which is why precision is the deciding factor. If you specifically protect 30% of a particular stock's geographic range, so accounting for its unique biogeography, the biomass increases by 10.2%.
Ah, so nearly double.
Yes. Biogeography is the study of the distribution of species and ecosystems in geographic space. You have to place the MPA over the precise habitats that matter.
Meaning you aren't just protecting empty water. You are actively targeting the critical life stages of the fish.
Okay, exactly.
You're drawing the box around their spawning grounds, their larval nurseries, or like the specific thermal refuges where the water stays cool enough for them to survive the summer.
Precisely. Precision targeting almost doubles the effectiveness of the MPA. But the geography is really only the first nuance.
Right, because I want to push back on the idea that this is a universal win for everyone. We said closing off the ocean gives us more fish to catch, which solves our paradox.
Right.
But does this spillover effect actually guarantee more fish for the commercial industry in every single scenario?
The model provides a very sobering reality check on that assumption. The answer is definitively no.
Really?
Yeah. The spillover benefit, that 10% catch increase, only applies to stocks that are currently overexploited and desperate for a recovery.
So what happens if you apply the MPA to a fish stock that is already healthy?
If a fish stock is already well managed, meaning it is currently being fished at what we call the maximum sustainable yield, implementing a large 30% no-take MPA actually reduces the catch potential for the fishing industry by 3 to 5%.
Wait, it reduces it? Let's define maximum sustainable yield for the listener, because that seems to be the tipping point.
Sure. Maximum sustainable yield is the theoretical largest catch that can be taken from a species stock over an indefinite period. To use your financial analogy, it means the fishery is already extracting the exact amount of interest the population generates each year without ever touching the principal. The population is perfectly balanced.
Ah, so if the population is already balanced and healthy, putting 30% of it behind a no-take wall doesn't trigger a massive exponential rebound.
Nope.
You aren't generating a flood of new fish to overinflate the balloon.
Right. I mean, the biomass of the fish inside the MPA does still increase slightly, but the spillover just isn't dramatic enough to make up for the fact that you just banned fishermen from 30% of their traditional working grounds.
You're shrinking the available territory without triggering the massive recovery needed to offset that loss of space.
Exactly.
Wow. That completely changes how policymakers need to view this tool. It means marine protected areas are primarily a recovery mechanism for broken systems. They aren't just a magic catch multiplier for already sustainable fisheries.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture looking at the socioeconomic realities, the simulation model highlights severe human trade-offs. Well, the computer model assumes 100% perfect enforcement of these no-take zones. It also mathematically assumes that the fishing effort, the boats, the nets, the hours that would have happened inside the MPA is perfectly displaced and evenly distributed to the surrounding open areas.
So the boats don't just disappear when you draw the line. They just move right outside the border.
Right. But in the real world, displacing that human effort creates massive friction. It increases fuel costs because boats have to travel further to find new grounds.
Oh, that makes sense.
It leads to localized depletion, where the area immediately outside the MPA gets absolutely hammered by concentrated fishing pressure. It disrupts the availability of seafood for highly localized markets.
Yeah.
And it creates deep equity issues. A coastal community might completely lose access to their historical fishing grounds, while another community located right next to the new spillover zone reaps all the financial benefits.
You can't just optimize the math without dealing with the human fallout. Displacing an industry shifts the economic burden onto the communities least equipped to handle it.
Which is exactly why the researchers emphasize that MPAs are just one part of a management portfolio. They require careful, equitable consideration and intense participation from local stakeholders to actually function without destroying livelihoods.
Okay, so just when we have the perfect strategy mapped out, you target the overexploited species, protect 30% of their specific biogeographical range to cover spawning grounds, cut fishing by 25%, and carefully manage the socioeconomic displacement there is a counterintuitive phenomenon buried in this data that completely flips the biological script.
Yes.
So what does this all mean? Let's dive into the protection paradox.
This was perhaps the most unexpected finding in the entire simulation. To understand the protection paradox, we really have to look at how commercial fishing physically alters the traits of a species over time.
Okay.
Decades of intensive overfishing act as a brutal form of artificial selection. The physical mesh of the fishing nets catches the largest, oldest fish.
Right, big ones get stuck.
Exactly. The ones that slip through the net, survive, and reproduce tend to be the smaller individuals.
So we are essentially acting as an evolutionary pressure. By constantly removing the large fish before they can breed, we are inadvertently forcing the population to pass down the genes for smaller body sizes.
We are genetically downsizing the ocean.
That's wild.
But here is the profound biological twist. Smaller fish generally possess a larger metabolic scope relative to their maximum size.
Which brings us back to the aerobic treadmill. Why does a smaller fish have an easier time breathing in a warming ocean?
It comes down to the ratio between their surface area and their volume. A fish absorbs oxygen through the surface area of its gills, but its entire body volume demands that oxygen.
Okay, I'm following.
In a smaller fish, that ratio is highly favorable. They have plenty of gill surface area relative to their small body mass.
Right.
Because their baseline metabolic demand is lower, they are actually more resilient to the warming waters and the dropping oxygen levels caused by climate change.
Wait, I want to make sure I'm grasping the scale of this irony. By relentlessly overfishing these populations and destroying their natural size structure, we accidentally bred a version of the species that is physically better equipped to survive global warming.
It is a dark, staggering irony. The stressed, overexploited, smaller-bodied populations are inherently more robust against the suffocating effects of a warming ocean.
That is incredible. But how does that reality turn the marine protected area into a paradox?
Well, think about what happens when the MPA works perfectly. The MPA eliminates the artificial selection of the fishing nets. The population is given sanctuary to rebuild.
Right.
Over the decades, the fish are allowed to live longer and grow back to their natural, much larger body sizes.
Which is the entire goal of conservation. We want the big fish back.
You do.
Yeah.
But as a fish grows larger, its body volume increases much faster than the surface area of its gills.
Oh, no.
Those larger, older, naturally restored fish have a vastly smaller metabolic scope. They demand exponentially more oxygen to survive. So as the MPA succeeds in its goal of restoring the natural body size of the species physically becomes highly sensitive to the warming ocean again.
So as we hit our conservation targets, we are physically manufacturing an animal that is more vulnerable to the climate crisis.
That is the core of the protection paradox. As the stocks rebuild inside the MPA, the study maps out a distinct transition period.
Okay.
Initially, you see incredible co-benefits. We achieve our conservation goals, the biomass rebounds, and the spillover gives us more fisheries catch.
Right.
But as the population fully recovers to its natural size structure, we transition into a space of severe trade-offs.
Because the larger fish are hitting that physiological wall again.
Yes. And it's compounded by what biologists call density-dependent limits. Once the MPA is full of massive fish, they start fiercely competing for the same limited food and space.
So the population growth stalls out.
Exactly. So the benefits from the spillover effects begin to shrink, and the fish themselves become highly stressed by that 2.6 to 2.9 degrees of ambient warming.
It's like we were successfully curing the ocean of one disease, overfishing, only to realize that the cure makes the patient uniquely susceptible to a second disease, climate change.
It perfectly illustrates why we can't view marine management in a vacuum. You cannot just solve the fishing pressure and ignore global greenhouse gas emissions because the physical biology of the animals links the two inextricably.
Wow.
The MPA is a brilliant, necessary buffer, but it interacts with the physiology of the fish in ways that force us to constantly adapt our strategies.
Let's synthesize this journey because the scale of what this study models is just massive. We started with a harsh reality. Climate change is literally suffocating marine life, putting them on a metabolic treadmill with shrinking oxygen and a collapsing food supply.
Right.
But there is a mathematically proven intervention. If we use precision biogeography to create no-take zones over 30% of a specific overexploited species range, and we combine that sanctuary with a strict 25% reduction in overall catch, we can generate enough biological momentum to offset the damage of a rapidly warming ocean.
Assuming we implement it with incredible precision.
Right. Assuming we manage the human fallout, the displaced communities, the increased fuel costs, the localized economic impacts, and assuming we are prepared to navigate the dark irony of the protection paradox,
yeah,
where saving the fish makes them larger, require more oxygen, and therefore leaves them more vulnerable to the heat.
Which raises one final crucial question based on everything we've looked at today.
What's that?
We've seen how effective drawing these strict boundaries on a map can be for rebuilding biomass. But as the ocean warms, the fundamental distributions of these species are shifting.
Yeah.
The water is getting too hot, so the fish are being pushed toward the poles, seeking out cooler, deeper thermal refuges just to survive.
They are migrating to stay within their survivable temperature range.
Exactly. So what happens when the fish populations we painstakingly saved, the ones we rebuilt to their natural sizes, physically migrate out of the static, fixed boundaries of the MPAs we drew to protect them?
Wow. That is a haunting thought. We draw the perfect, precise sanctuary on the map, we suffer the economic trade-offs to enforce it, and the biological wealth just swims right out the back door looking for a colder current, leaving our protected zones completely empty.
Yeah.
It means our solutions have to be just as dynamic and adaptable as the ocean itself. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you, and we'll catch you next time.